Hi, and welcome to Detox, Talks the Detox, a podcast where we talk to some of the world's finest leaders about their detox rituals and how they maintain continuity in a world of noise and chaos. How they make sure that the criticism that the world puts on them doesn't affect their insight and they still continue to perform as well as they do. Thanks for tuning in. This is Kunal Sundaramani, and you are listening to Detox, Talks the Detox.
With Joanne Lipman on the podcast. Joanne is incredible. She's been the editor-in-chief at Condé Nast, the deputy managing editor at the Wall Street Journal. She's worked as the editor-in-chief at USA Today. Her new book just came out next, The Power of Reinvention. This is her second book. She's done so much and had an incredible journey. Thank you so much for making time. It's a privilege to host you on.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
So Joanne had a very extensive journey through very, very different phases at very, very different companies, and then currently lecturing at Yale. How's your journey been like?
You know, it's funny. My new book, which is next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work, I interviewed hundreds of people who had gone through these major life transitions. And the reason I mention this in the answer to your question is because when I would talk to people who seem to have really extreme pivots in life, like a guy who used to be an economist and now he's a cattle farmer, or a guy who used to be a telephone repairman and now he's a women's shoe designer. And I would talk to these people and I'd say, walk me through your journey, because wow, what a journey it has been and such extreme pivots. And they all look at me like I'm nuts. And they would say things like, well, no, I'm the same person. It's like, it was very organic, moving from one stage to the next stage to the next. And it kind of all makes sense in my journey. It's not like I just dropped my personality and dropped my profession and picked up another. It's more like it was an iterative process and it was organic. And so when you ask me the question, when people talk to me and say, wow, you've reinvented yourself, I do the same thing. I'm like, no, you know, I'm a journalist. I've always been a journalist, and my journalism skills have sort of taken me through from newspapers, magazines, digital, writing books, teaching. I teach the media and democracy at Yale. So to me, it's sort of all of a piece, though I understand that to an external eyes, it may not look that way.
I love that. I think the magic word is organic.
Yes, it is. It is. You wouldn't think, you know, I this is so interesting. I think that when you talk to particularly people who are going through challenges and changes, and you know, you're thinking, oh, am I in the right career? Do I need to switch careers? When you're having that kind of stress and that struggle, it can seem so difficult. But at the end of the day, so many people end up, when they do pivot or when they do go through these struggles, it actually is leading them toward an organic change, to something that when I talk to these people, they'll say, oh, this is just more of a fulfilling who I already am, right? It's just a deeper expression of who I already am, which is a really interesting way of thinking about it, as opposed to sort of, I don't like my career, so I quit today and tomorrow I'm going to be an astronaut. Like, that is not the way to do it.
Now I'm just thinking, if astronaut, like from something that's very unrelated, can become very organic when you're in it.
Yeah. I think people, you know, people have interests and they will take them to kind of new and different places. I mean, you know, there was a woman who I interviewed who started out as an epidemiologist and then accidentally became famous as what she was called, the budget fashionista. And she would go on TV and tell you about all these great cheap shoes she found at Target or Kohl's or some discount store. And now when I tracked her down recently, she is she's actually an investor and an advisor to Black owned technology companies. And I said, I cannot even imagine three more different careers than you have had. And she looked again, she looked at me, she's like, no way. She said, it was all organic. She said, I do pivot by nature, but everything I did led me to the next thing I did, which led me to the next thing I did. And I thought that was kind of beautiful, right? It's a great way to think about your journey, as in you're using everything in your life and everything you've learned and applying it in some new and creative way.
I love that. I think a lot of it is around, like, there is no destination mindset.
Yes, I love what you just said, because so often we are told in life, right? And you read these business books and they say, You need to have a goal, and then you need to plan every single step of the way to get to your goal. And so many of the people who I've met along the way, and in fact, in my own life, so often you end up in a place where you never expected to be, right? It just like leads you, your interests and your experiences lead you somewhere unexpected. And I think there's something really wonderful about having an openness and an open-mindedness to say, okay, I thought I wanted to do X, but wow, I'm now being led to this other, much more fulfilling and more interesting path.
I think it's comical because when you're in the moment, so many times everything you're thinking about is everything but the moment, just to realize that the moment is the only thing that you have, and that is the destination.
100%. I love that too, because yes, so much of the, I talked to all kinds of researchers for this book as well. And what they will tell you, and what I'm trying to practice in real life, is that you need to focus on the here and now and the journey and not on some goal. Because if all you focus on is the goal, then you're missing, you know, 99.9% of life. And then if you don't hit the goal for whatever reason, then it just seems all for naught. Whereas if you really just sort of like, enjoy the journey, even the hard parts of the journey, even if you're struggling, right? If you just sort of lean into that and try and remain present, it makes all the difference.
It's as if you're already in the destination. The journey is the destination.
The journey is the destination. That's right.
So when you're in the middle of like taking one of these larger changes, like when it was moving from one publication to the other, or starting lecturing at Yale, in that process, when all of that's happening, at certain points, especially early in your career, when you felt it to be more overwhelming than today when a different change comes up, how would you look to say detox from that to just be able to actually focus on the next thing rather than get overwhelmed by it?
Yeah, you know, when I was younger, I think I didn't. I just kept focus, work around the clock. And then I had my kids and I was, you know, then it was, you're just completely consumed. It's work, kids. there's no time for anything else. And I think as I've gotten older, I've learned a lot about the power of taking a break. Like that to me is huge. In my new book, Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work, I have a chapter actually on you can't reinvent yourself without taking a break. I have a chapter that's basically you deserve a break today. And there's so much research that we know, but we kind of intellectually know, but we tend to ignore, which is how important it is during the course of your day, during the course of your week, during the course of your year, to take those very intentional breaks. So like during the day, go outside, take a walk in nature if you can, you know, get up from your desk every once in a while. But also, you know, you need to protect your off time, your nights or weekends, whatever your off time is. You need to take your vacations. There's research that shows, for example, if you can even take a longer period of time, like academics who take sabbaticals, come back with much fresher ideas and new, you know, more creative concepts. And same thing with CEOs. There was a study of CEOs who were able to take sabbaticals. They too would come back with all these great ideas that they couldn't have had while they were sitting there focused. But I will tell you just in terms of day to day for people who are listening, can I tell you like my favorite way, I think is the most effective way to help you in your work life in terms of breaks. It's something called the 90-minute rule, or at least that's what I call it, the 90-minute rule. And what it is, and I learned this, by the way, from a friend when I was writing my first book, I had terrible writer's block. After sitting there in front of my computer for 4 days, looking at that cursing blinker computer screen and getting nowhere, I was so frustrated. And then I ran into this friend and he said, you got to try this 90-minute rule. And what it is when you're working on a project during the day, you sit for 90 minutes with zero distractions and just focus. And that means no email, no phone calls, no social media, just focus.
But at the end of 90 minutes, you must stop and you must take a break. And you got to do something else. Doesn't really matter. You can eat or, you know, exercise or take whatever you want to do, as long as it's not working. And then you come back and you do it again for 90 minutes. And my friend said, you're not going to be able to do this for more than three times in a day, total of 4.5 hours of work. And you will get done more than you could possibly get done in a 12-hour day of just sitting there. And he was right. I mean, it cured my writer's block. And the reason is for 90 minutes, at the end of 90 minutes, you have a hard stop, you have a deadline, and it forces you to, like, from in my case, like, just get something down on paper. And then I walk away and then I would come back to it fresh and I could fix whatever I just saw on paper. I mean, figurative paper, since it's on a computer. But anyways, it was a wonderful strategy that I highly recommend.
I love it. I think the amount of work done and the amount of time put in correlated in a very wrong way.
Yeah. But I do think, you know, to the point of detox, like, it's so important to understand, like, how important it is to, you know, give ourselves a break, to take a break. Also, you know, to the point of when we're talking about detox, one of the things that I found, and I think this has also been very helpful to me personally, but also I have now seen, like, readers are really responding to this. In Next, I have what I call a reinvention roadmap. I talked to hundreds of people who had gone through major transformations or career or life changes. And then I talked to all these experts who study them, you know, neuroscientists and psychologists and management theorists. And I found that pretty much everyone will go through four stages, like when you're in a transition. And the four stages are search, struggle, stop, solution. So we tend, when we tell these stories of people who had great, let's say, career transformations, we tend to focus on the beginning and the end. It's like Cinderella, right? It's like instant. It happens overnight. It's like Cinderella or Spider-Man or Batman or American Idol. Like, everything in the culture tells us these transformations happen overnight. But in fact, the real work gets done in that middle period, in the struggle. And what I have found is right now, particularly after the pandemic, as the pandemic is receding, so many of us are in that struggle right now where we're rethinking our lives, we're rethinking our relationship to our jobs, we're rethinking, we're reprioritizing. And it can feel really hard. It's difficult, right? You're struggling. Like, where am I going from here? And what I found is that we tend, because of this sort of Cinderella myth that it should be overnight, and, you know, we tend to think there's something wrong with us. We tend to think, to feel really lonely, like we're the only ones experiencing this kind of struggle. And we tend to feel like we are standing still or stuck in the mud, you know, spinning our wheels, choose your analogy. But in fact, what I found in my research is that it's actually the single most important part of any of these processes is the struggle. And not only that, we all go through it. There's nothing wrong with you if you're in it right now. And even though you feel like you're standing still, you are actually moving forward. And I think that's so powerful because I think, you know, I've been through periods like that. I think so many of us are going through that right at this very moment. And it's so powerful to understand that it's normal and it's healthy and there's nothing wrong with you and you will get through it and it's productive, even though it doesn't feel that way. It is actually productive.
It's comical, but I think some of the most, it's funny, it's something I realized after a lot of time trying was just how many things that really are how they are very counterintuitive.
Yeah. So, but it's interesting to me that when I'm, you know, out there speaking or writing and when people are reading the book, like, that is so powerful for people. Cause I do feel like we are, you know, it's like the reason behind your podcast. I mean, that there's so many people who really are trying to find their way forward.
I couldn't agree more. Talking a bit more about your journey, when was it the time that you really were able to develop systems to deal with all of it? Like, what led you to, at the first point, developing these systems that you put to use today?
Yeah. I would say, you know, I had wanted to be a journalist, actually, from the time I was a child. I was very fortunate that way. A lot of people don't know what they want to be when they grow up. But I knew I wanted to do something with writing. I read a book that some of your listeners may have heard of when I was 7 years old, a book called Harriet the Spy. And which was this wonderful book about a little girl who spies on all her friends and neighbors and writes it all down. And I begged my mom for a notebook like Harriet the Spy so that I could spy on my sisters and my neighbors and write it all down. Which I guess did lead me to a career in journalism. But so I did, I was, you know, I knew I wanted to write. And I actually, my dad read the Wall Street Journal from the time I was, before I was born. So it was always in my house. And I never picked it up until I was in college and I had an internship at a magazine. And it was before the iPhone was invented. And so I had nothing to read. And so I picked up his Wall Street Journal while I was commuting and I fell in love with the writing. And the writing on the front page in particular was like the best writing I'd ever seen. And I was like, I want to work at the Wall Street Journal someday. And there was an internship and I worked very hard in college with a goal of getting that internship, which I did. And then they hired me. So I was able to start at the Wall Street Journal right out of college, which was amazing. And I stayed for 22 years and I loved it. I mean, I went from starting as a reporter, then a columnist, then a page one editor. And then I created Weekend Journal and Personal Journal and the Saturday paper that didn't used to exist. And I was the deputy managing editor there. And I loved it. I loved it. I never thought about leaving. And I think when you talk about like these big transitions, the first one I had was when I was approached by Cy Newhouse, who sadly is no longer with us, but he was the guy who owned and ran Condé Nast, which is the magazine company that publishes Vogue, Vanity Fair, The New Yorker. And he approached me about creating a business magazine as a companion, as another Condé Nast publication. To me, that was just too enticing to not go. But I will tell you, it was really hard when you talk about like making these big transitions. It's even after they offered me this opportunity to come over and create the magazine of my dreams, which was like an amazing opportunity. I still was like, but wait a second, I love the job I have. Like it was really, really hard. And it was very interesting because what finally helped me make the decision to leave and to create this magazine, it was my husband who said, when you talk about this theoretical magazine, I see your body language change. I see your eyes light up. Like I see something in you that you have an excitement that I don't see when you're talking about your current job. And it was such a revelatory moment because he was able to see something in me that I wasn't. And I fast forward to now where, you know, in my book Next, I talk about strategies of how to make changes and what are some strategies to help you make those transitions. And one of the ones that I found from psychologists is a thing that it's called the expert companion. And the expert companion is someone who can reflect back to you, what are your talents, your skills, your abilities in a way that you don't see yourself. In other words, we all have sort of innate skills and talents and strengths and weaknesses, but they're so innate to us that we often don't recognize them or we discount talents that we have because we don't see them. And your expert companion is someone who, it could be a career coach, but it could also be like a friend or a relative. It's somebody who sees something in you that you may not see yourself. And it really helps you to make that transition. And in that case, this is years before I ever heard of such a thing as an expert companion, but that's what my husband did. Like he was able to see in me something that I could not see myself. And it was super helpful. So that's how I made that leap. But the biggest transition probably was after the financial crisis in 2008. So in 2009, within a year after the financial crisis, when I was at Condé Nast at a magazine and all the advertising was falling apart everywhere. And that's what supported the magazine. And so the magazine closed. Condé Nast had to close a bunch of magazines, including ours. And that was the first time ever in my adult life that I wasn't going 24/7 and I wasn't attached to a publication. That takes a lot of adjustment. You know, there's so many ways it takes adjustment. It's like suddenly your days aren't full. Suddenly like you go to a cocktail party and people say, what do you do? And you're like, I used to? Like, how do you answer that question? There's a ton of research on this, by the way, about identity and self-identity and how much we identify with our jobs. And I experienced all of that. And I think that that was my first experience in like having to take a time out and say, wow, like, how do I put all this together? Like, how do I think about all this? And I think the best thing I did at that moment was I decided that I would take, you know, minimum of 3 or 4 months. And I ended up taking 6 months where I was not going to rush into another job. I wasn't going to, you know, I wanted to kind of process everything. And I also wanted to sort of recuperate after like working like an insane person for decades, which I did. And I think that, again, to the point of detoxing, like that was essential.
I love that. I think there was an external force, but I think when there isn't, it's just so difficult to take that step back without realizing that you really needed to get to the next level.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that is very, very common to people. You know, there's sometimes a tendency to like rush into something else. But sometimes that's, you know, it can be a good thing, but it is not necessarily for everyone the right move.
I think we don't realize how much of the energy, even after we're done with something and just moving to the next second thing, we don't realize how much we still are committed to that. We haven't like really refreshed or reset after it. And we're just going at the next one with 31% battery.
That's very true.
Going a little further, today when there's a new fire, when a big change comes, what are the toolkits that you use to like just deal with it?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the timeout is huge. I think, you know, I personally take to heart like this idea of walking in nature or just getting out in nature. And I live in New York City in Manhattan, but I will literally like go to a park and walk around. I discovered this when I was at Gannett, which owns USA Today. And so I was running USA Today as well as the USA Today Network, which was all of these Gannett papers. So that was a very, very intense job. There was a lot of work. And it was in Virginia in an office park. In the office park, there was like a little pond with a path around it. And I started taking walks around the pond. And then I started doing meetings while we walked around the pond. And I realized that just that little break leaving the office, I mean, and just going right outside, even though you're like next to a highway, but you're like walking the pond and you're seeing nature and you're in the open air. And I would, when I had these meetings walking around the pond, we came up with great ideas. Like it unlocked creativity. It freed our minds in a way. And it was amazing because it's not like we were trekking in the wilderness, you know. I found that that was like incredibly restorative. And so I have tried to keep that up. One other thing that is really important are social ties, and not just like in your immediate social ties, but, you know, reaching out to people in your broader network is also incredibly restorative. And it's also very helpful if you're going through any kind of change. There's a lot of research that shows that, for example, if you're looking for a new job, you're far more likely to get leads from your wider network, like what are called your weak ties, people you don't know that well, or dormant ties, which is people you have not spoken to in a long time. And the reason is because your immediate ties, your closest network, like these are your friends and family, and you all know the same thing, and you're sort of in a bubble. Whereas when you reach outside, those people can surface fresh opportunities. They can give you, you know, fresh ideas. And it also feels good. Like there's research on this that shows both from a professional kind of career perspective, but also from a psychological perspective, it's incredibly helpful for your mental health to rekindle these ties. And especially if you reach out to somebody, you know, who helped you along the way, just to like, let them know you're thinking of them and like, you want to say thank you, which, by the way, a former colleague did that to me recently. And I'm telling you, I was walking around on air for like the rest of the day from just a simple email saying, I just was thinking of you. You really helped me out in this situation 10 years ago. It just warmed my heart. It was amazing.
I love that. I think, especially in a world like today with everything that's happening, I think we forget often the power of a human connection.
Yeah, it's very true. Very true.
So beyond that, any fun stories that really, really come up when you think about the past?
I guess my favorite stories are, you know, reporting stories and everything that I went through to try and get stories, which some of the things, you know, my parents would have been horrified if they knew the kind of danger I put myself in, but they ended up being great adventures. Though I would say probably, you know, the most meaningful stressful experience in my professional life was 9/11, because I was in the Trade Center on 9/11 when the first plane hit. And I was with a colleague, actually. The Wall Street Journal office was across the street. I was at the Wall Street Journal at the time. So we had to be, you know, we were evacuated and got out. It had just happened. So nobody knew what had happened, right? It was the first plane had come in and, you know, we come out into the open air and like there's plaster, pulverized stuff like floating down through the air. There's chunks of concrete on the ground, like on top of cars. And there's people saying like, oh, it was a helicopter or it was a sightseeing plane. Like people didn't know what it was. And then my colleague and I had to go, we were trying to get to our office, which was blocked by wreckage and plane wreckage and human remains, which I don't even want to talk about. And that was when the second plane came in and our building was almost destroyed because it was across the street and it was not habitable. And we ended up kind of evacuating on foot, going uptown. But what was amazing about that day was how my colleagues reacted. Like every single person at the Wall Street Journal became a reporter. Everybody, no matter what your job was, people were interviewing, they were finding information, they were doing everything they could. And our whole central nervous system, which was our headquarters, was out of commission. And so they set up in back office space in New Jersey. There were executives there who hadn't been journalists in 40 years, and they became journalists and they set up a newsroom there so that we could send information there. It was just remarkable. And we were able to get a newspaper out the next day, which won a Pulitzer Prize, because it should have, because our building was destroyed. And yet the whole organization came together in a way that I have never been more proud. And I don't think I will ever be more proud of any day in my professional life, for sure, because it was remarkable to see how my colleagues, like everybody, pulled together as one, even though we were all disconnected and communication was down and we didn't even know where we all were. And we didn't know if anybody, you know, if people were alive or dead. I mean, it was intense. I'm so proud of that organization and of all my colleagues.
I think as a podcast host, I say this very few times, but I'm out of words. Moving to the rapid fire round, a couple quick questions, answer them in the least possible time.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
Apples or oranges?
Apples.
Apple or Android?
Apple
Windows.
Wait, Mac or Windows? Wait, I have Windows on my Mac.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty cool. One piece of advice that is given very often but isn't correct.
You must know your endpoint. You have to know your goal, and that you have to then have a plan to get to that goal. And the reason it's incorrect is because your goal could change. And if you get locked into some kind of goal, or by the way, if you don't even know what your goal should be, there's nothing wrong with you. And in fact, so many of the people who I met when I was reporting the book Next, so many of those people ended up in a completely different place than they thought. And it was a much more fulfilling place.
One piece of advice that isn't given as often.
You need to lean into the struggle. Like, we all struggle and nobody wants to talk about it, but you need to embrace it. And that piece of advice isn't given because nobody wants to take it. But trust me, it is the most important part of any of the whole process of like going through change and getting to someplace better and transitioning. And you won't regret it later, but it's hard now. But you got to lean into it and embrace it.
Your favorite music artist?
Freddie Mercury and Queen.
Your favorite movie?
The Wizard of Oz.
Your favorite web series?
Succession, obviously.
Your favorite place in the world?
We have a house in the Hudson Valley, and that is my favorite place in the world.
Your favorite travel destination?
London.
Your favorite person?
Well, my husband and two children. Oh, actually, and my son-in-law. Four favorite people.
If you could live at one place for the rest of your life, what place would that be?
I think where I am right now, in Manhattan.
Your favorite experience in the past year?
I think my favorite experience was when I made Thanksgiving dinner for my entire extended family. So it was close to 30 people.
One piece of advice that you were given that's probably the best words you've ever heard.
Oh yeah, I got a great piece of advice before I even became a manager of people. One of my bosses, I remember I was on page one of the Wall Street Journal, and there are only three stories that could fit on the page. And there were two stories that were vying for one spot, and my boss picked one, and I thought I would have picked the other one. And I asked him, why did he pick the one that he chose? And he gave me the greatest advice. He said, the most important thing is make a decision. Said,
Wow.
You may or may not ever remember what that decision was, but the most important thing you can do is to make the decision. You don't want to be the person who waffles and goes back and forth.
Wow, I am going to hold on to that one. Driving or flying?
I don't like either.
Favorite place in New York?
Central Park.
One electronic device that is not your phone, your smartwatch, or your laptop, or your car that really plays an important role in your life?
How about my ring light?
Another electronic device that is not your ring light?
My KitchenAid plastic stand mixer.
The best view you've seen in the past year?
I took a hike near our house, which is more than 50 miles outside. It's in, like I said, Hudson Valley. And I took a hike up to the top of a very tall hill. It was like off the, near the Appalachian Trail. And you could actually see Manhattan. It was amazing. It was amazing to be out in the wilderness on a hike and get to this high elevation where you can literally see the tops of the tallest towers in Manhattan.
The best movie you've seen?
The movie She Said, which was about tracking down Harvey Weinstein.
Perfect. How did you come up with the name for your first book?
That's What She Said?
Yep.
Because my son at the dinner table would like to use That's What She Said as a dirty joke. And one day, you know, the book actually started out with a different title. And one day I was walking home and I realized, you know, one of the things I talk about in That's What She Said is how women are talked over all the time and men get credit for things that women say, like they get credit for women's ideas. And I thought to myself, yeah, you know, you're in a meeting and a woman says something, then a guy repeats it, he gets the credit, and everybody's saying, well, she said, like all the women are saying, well, that's what she said. I'm like, oh, that's it. That is the title. Because it works both as reclaiming the dirty joke, but it also works because it is literally what happens to women.
I love it. Thank you so much for taking our time. This was such a privilege and honor to host you.
Yeah, it was fun. Fun. Thank you very much.
You just heard an episode on the Detox Podcast. Do not forget to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform, whether it is Spotify or iTunes. We are there.